Coming up at 5:30 this evening, there is going to be at City Hall a informational session regarding some of the code changes that the Planning Commission has been working on over the past, I don't know, year plus.
Yeah, it's with the Planning Commission, it's been about 6-8 months. And they've been working really diligently with the City Council, too, so in work sessions with the both of them.
All right, joining me now, Kelly Weiss, of course, and, of course, Wendy Farley Campbell. Both have extensive knowledge on this because they've both been involved in it since the get-go. What sort of changes are happening in this? So what's been 29 years since we've had some code updates, or at least to this magnitude, some code updates. What are some of the specific things that you're going to address this evening, Wendy?
One of the things that is probably the most significant is increasing the types of housing that will be allowed within residential neighborhoods. So it's increasing the opportunities for different types of housing styles that were not envisioned. And it was actually 39 years ago.
Well, 39. Oh, yeah. It's almost 40 years. That's right. Yeah.
In a planning world, that's back when the world was tract housing. You had big apartment complexes and, you know, a duplex sprinkled in here or there. So this will look at opportunities for townhomes, cluster developments, where you just own a little tiny little postage stamp of a space shared with other folks, triplexes, quads.
Well, I mean, even, you know, 40 years ago, we didn't, in fact, even probably 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, we didn't have a term ADU. I still use that term out in public. So I'm going to build an ADU on my property. I'm just like, what's that? You know, so it's also a change in nomenclature to change the way we talk about the housing industry as well, isn't it?
True. We'll still put things in there to lead people to what they mean. Mother-in-law cottage, granny flat, things
right.
like that.
Yeah,
yes.
that'll be very helpful for a lot of people. Now, this is not. This is not necessarily a session where people can come in and complain about, you know, the neighborhood changing or that, because you guys have already had many, many meetings going through a lot of this information. So this is more of about, this is kind of where we are now. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So this is a chance for people to come and ask questions and figure out what it means for them, or just get the broad overview of what these code changes are about. We're going to actually have a public hearing with the City Council and the Planning Commission on November 18th. So if people have comments about it that they want the Planning Commission and the City Council to hear, that's when they come to that formal public hearing. But there's actually been, my goodness, these went through the Community and Economic Development Committee back in like December, January. And then we've had four work sessions with the City Council and the Planning Commission. And we had an open house in the spring. So these are at the tail end of the process to get them through. And it's been a good year and a half.
So if questions do arise at this meeting tonight, is there time to be able to look at that and see if any further changes need to be made before the public hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. So if somebody so we're going to give a general presentation, about 20 minutes, just about the code changes in general. And then it's just a chance for people to come and ask questions about their specific property or their specific thoughts. And we can dive into the details on their home or their lot or whatever it is. And then they can have a really good understanding of what it means to them, and then come prepared if they do have comments at the November 18th public hearing.
Now, I know in some areas of the downtown area, and I say downtown, I think there's another term for it because it includes property on the west side of Highway 101. There are some small sliver properties that in the past, you know, weren't really effective for building. Is that going to bring these more into a usable space?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately what the goal was with this was to create more buildable lots and make it easier for people to do infill development and easier to do, you know, non-traditional subdivisions, basically. So that is one of the things that we included, those being able to have a method for people to develop those smaller, skinny lots.
Yeah, anywhere in town, not even just the old town downtown.
Well, Wendy, has the city looked at how the overall look of the town is going to be affected by the more dense population or the more dense housing units? Or is that not really a concern as far as, you know, the overall look and feel?
So look and feel, We are addressing look and feel through a couple of ways. The new uses, the cluster development, and then the triplexes and quads will have design standards. So they need to, when in Rome, be in Rome and look like your neighborhood for the most part. They will have design standards. Now, residential homes do not have design standards, but we are looking to assign some to those other uses so that they fit more with the character of their neighborhood.
Well, you do have some color standards in there. I happen to know that personally.
We do. For certain areas of town, some of those people are really fortunate to have some color standards. Also, multifamily dwellings we're establishing very specific code for them. We've always processed them as commercial uses with regards to architectural design standards, so they will have their own very specific standards that apply to them now. And some other things that have to do with how something looks is the code may allow you to do something on your lot, put in a quad, for instance, because you have a large enough lot to do so. But if the utilities that are along your street are not sufficiently sized and you're not willing to make those upgrades to include that, then you wouldn't be able to do that type of a use. That is, in a way, how you
judge what can be put in there.
Exactly. Yeah. And that will drive what things look like in your neighborhood. If the infrastructure wasn't put in to support that type of use, then the infrastructure will need to be improved upon by the developer.
And that's a possibility. I mean, if they want to spend the money, they can do that. Although I imagine that some of that involves probably ripping up streets and getting in there. So it's probably a costly thing.
It does. And in my experience, it's not a real favorable option to a lot of developers.
So. Yeah, because that extra cost means they have to get more and that's not necessarily, when you look at a house and you figure square footage, price per foot, you don't necessarily consider those upgrades in that price. So that's
correct.
Hard.
It's something that, at least it's an opportunity for them, and it's
absolutely
just something that you need to analyze, that return on investment. Is that worth it for that particular property?
I guess it depends on how long-term of an investment mm-hmm. they want to make, because over time, they'll certainly make that back. It's just a matter of whether if it's a quick, you know, in and out. That's a different story altogether.
Absolutely.
Things like one of the meetings I went to talked about the height versus the peak height of the house versus the current standards. How much is that changing?
Presently, our code is 28 feet is the height, and that's measured to the middle of a gable. So if you're thinking about a peaked roof, we're talking about the middle of that peak, not the top of the peak. And over many, many years, this has been inconsistently applied, depending on whether you're looking at building code or land use code or going to a public hearing. We're standardizing it so that it's tippy-tippy top, as one planning commissioner would have said, so that they know exactly how tall something is. That's what the layperson, whenever they're thinking about how tall something is, they're thinking tippy-tippy top, mm-hmm. not middle of a gable. So we're changing our definition to be that. And then we also, to allow more diversity in the roof pitch types that contractors are wanting to put in, maybe they want to put a loft in. They've just not been able to do so with the current limitations on that building height. And so measuring tippy-tippy top and then increasing the building height to 34 feet will give them that opportunity then to put in a loft space for additional bedroom space or an accessory dwelling unit internally, whatever.
I know I in my lifetime, and I don't know if this is a good thing or bad, I've been on a lot of roofs, but the roof on my house is so I guess, was it a 12-1 or I don't know. I don't even know how to figure it. But I can't even get to the peak of the roof without – you know, fearing for my life because, yes. you know, kind of side. So that'll be a little bit of a change there, right? They'll be able to do a little bit different mm-hmm. things with that.
Yes, they'll be able to go flatter or go steeper just depending on the design, the architectural design of the particular structure. It will not provide the opportunity to go three-story in a medium density, you know, typical subdivision. They'll be able to go 2.5, but not 3. And because we're not going to allow flat roofs, that is one of the proposals, is to not allow flat roofs in medium density neighborhoods or low density neighborhoods. But for high density, where you might would see apartments and expect that type of development, yeah, they will be able to do three story with that, with a flat roof.
Do the code changes address any of the new findings as far as tsunami, earthquake, stuff like that, because that wasn't really an issue 40 years ago either? Or is this just something more of a architectural design change?
Yeah, we're not looking at tsunamis with this code change. That already happened. And certain areas are already have limitations on them for the number of units you can have if you're in a tsunami zone, the high tsunami zone. And those, we're not proposing any changes to that. Now, if we're all of a sudden allowing a higher density in a zone that happens to be in a tsunami zone, then they may be regulated with regards to the standards that are already in place.
Is there any anything that will affect, say, modular housing or, you know, mobile homes or anything like that in the code changes?
With regard to typical mobile home parks and manufactured home subdivisions like Florentine, there are no changes being proposed that affect the ability for manufactured homes to locate. That's a state law that's required to permit those opportunities. Mobile homes, the same standards apply as what have in the past. We will be looking at these standards here coming up with our round two, which this is just round one. We'll be looking at transitional housing coming up and be looking at those codes that we've also had in place for a very, very long time. The state standards have changed a little bit with regards to that, and be getting our code up to place with those state standards.
Well, I guess what I'm curious is that if someone had a piece of property and said, okay, I want to put a mobile home park in there, is that still something that could happen?
It depends on the zoning. We're not changing
where it is.
We're not changing where those can happen. Mm-hmm. Presently, they're pretty limited opportunities for those types of developments. That is one of the challenges with the state law and bringing our code into standards, is that is something that needs to be looked at. There needs to be more opportunities for mobile homes in other districts, and presently our code doesn't provide that opportunity, and that does not meet state law. So we will be changing that in the future.
Now, forgive me because I forgot the change of the name, but it was NEDCO. Is there an opportunity for, say, more smaller home developments where you have cluster homes for tiny homes or stuff like that?
So the new name is DEV Northwest.
That's right.
Yep. So they combined with Willamette Neighborhood Housing Services, so they have a whole new name. This code is setting a criteria and a process for cluster housing development. So it's making it much easier for the developers to come in and think about those outside the box type of developments. Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, that's the whole point of these code updates, is to make it easier for somebody to come in and develop the different types of housing that we need. Because when we went through our Housing and Economic Opportunities project a year and a half ago, it was determined that we need housing, which, of course, the whole community knows this. But we have the data to back that up now, and that we're able to show our work and go through this process and update all of these codes. And really, I mean, it's not sexy, so to speak, but it's being able to have those developers know exactly what they're needing to do, have the code clear and objective, so they can be able to figure out their return on investment and then come in and apply. Right now, a lot of the time, they have to come in and ask the Planning Commission for a PUD, a planned unit development, to see if they can even make a project work. And by that time, they've already spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on architecture and that, without even knowing if they're going to be able to make that project pencil. So really, that's the nuts and bolts of what we're trying to do, is make it much easier for someone to come in and develop.
Well, and there are so many more options than in the day when you either had a home or you had a mobile home.
Yeah.
You know, and a tiny home community can probably house more people in more comfortable surroundings with a home they own than, say, a mobile home park could.
Yeah.
The density would be even better in a nicer environment. So we didn't have that option way back when, 40
Absolutely.
Years ago.
Yeah, right. There's some really neat developments happening all throughout the state. And I think, and I'm biased, but I think this DEV Northwest one will be a really wonderful development for our community, and show how you can kind of have that affordable housing and have it still really look nice and be a nice quality of life for people.
There is a development in Hendersonville, North Carolina, which took a large piece of property with a lake on and everything and made a tiny home community in that. And they even have stores and everything in the same shape, like tiny home stores and stuff. And it really, it has gone from maybe, I don't know, I think a dozen people that were initially living in there to now, I think over 100 that are in this development. And it really, it just sort of brings that sense of community back again, which a lot of places have lost because we've kind of gone our own way.
It's almost like we're going back to like the 40s or the 30s when that's when they were developing those smaller cottage homes or the what's the name of those apartment complexes with the communal space in the middle. Anyway,
garden apartments,
garden style, yeah,
brownstone, even opportunities like Sesame Street, you know, like where you might actually know
York
people.
But anyway, so it's creating that more communal living that people are really wanting. They're wanting to be able to walk to the library and walk to the park and be able to like see their neighbor across the way and wave. And that's not to say that every development now from here on out is going to be that way. We're going to have plenty of single family development still, because that's still something that people want. But we want to have the ability for people to have whatever kind of housing that makes sense for them economically, as well as just for the quality of life they want.
Well, and in a sense, even though it's a 10-year plan, this development that's going across from Fred Meyer will also have a similar feel, because it'll have retail spaces, it'll have living spaces, apartments, it'll have, you know, little homes. So it's really kind of, you know, other people are thinking about it just than the city of Florence.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me the specifics about the meeting this evening then. It's at 5:30, City Hall.
5:30
in the main meeting.
City Hall in the City Council chambers. We're going to have a little presentation from staff, just an opportunity to give an overview of the project, and then break it up into questions. We'll have question and answer for people who want to ask the whole group, and then just break up and let people ask staff specifically about their particular questions for their property or whatever it is they're wanting to know.
All right. Wendy Farley Campbell, Kelly Weiss, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up next on the November edition of Our Town, we're going to talk some safety issues and what you can and can't tell parents. I'll be speaking with Siuslaw School Superintendent Andy Grizz-Kowiak, the Siuslaw High School Principal Carrie Tatum, and Siuslaw School Board President Guy Rosenbaum, right after this on the November edition of Our Town.